would like to welcome our second panel of witnesses to the table. Ms. Ellen Steen, General Counsel and Secretary of the American Farm Bureau Federation from Washington, D.C. Mr. Jonathan Gledhill. Gledhill. See, you should go with my gut instincts, and I didn't do that. I wavered there. President of the Policy Navigation Group on behalf of the Waters Advocacy Coalition, Annandale, Virginia. Mr. Russ Bagicchia, Director of Government, Legislative, and Economic Development, Pennsylvania Rural Electric Association, out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Mr. Steve... Oh, we have everybody. Good. Mr. Sledge Taylor, cotton, corn, soybean, wheat, sorghum, and peanut producer from Como, Mississippi. And Mr. Steve Fogelsong, livestock producer from Astoria, Illinois. Thank you all for your testimony, the written testimony you submitted. I know that all members received a copy of that. I thought it was just very thorough, great information. We're looking forward to your oral testimony. That will the oral testimony is 5 minutes. The light system is in front of you. Basically, green, and when it gets to red, we just ask that begin to wrap up, whatever thoughts you're on at that point. And Ms. Steen, would you please go ahead when you're ready?
Thank you, Chairman Thompson and Ranking Member Lujan Grisham. My name is Ellen Steen, and I'm the General Counsel and Secretary of the American Farm Bureau Federation. I've spent the better part of my legal career, more than two decades, focused on the Clean Water Act and its implementing rules, particularly as they apply to agriculture and forestry activities. I've defended farmers and forest landowners against enforcement actions by EPA and by environmental interest groups who advocate broad interpretations of regulatory obligations and narrow interpretations of agricultural and forestry exemptions. I've closely studied the proposed rule, reading it against the backdrop of my own experience, and I would stake my professional reputation on the fact that this rule, unless it is dramatically altered from what was proposed, will result in Clean Water Act permit requirements and potential liability for an enormous number of commonplace and essential farming, ranching, and forestry practices nationwide. I say potential liability only because we cannot know today which farmers will face agency enforcement or citizen lawsuits. We also cannot know exactly when those inspections and lawsuits will happen. But what is certain is that a tremendous number of common, responsible farming and ranching and forestry practices that occur today without any need for a federal permit will be highly vulnerable to agency enforcement and citizen lawsuits under this rule. Congress never intended to impose Clean Water Act regulation on ordinary farming and ranching activities. Instead, Congress designed incentive-based, state-led programs to promote responsible farming and ranching practices. We support those programs. We support environmental stewardship among farmers and ranchers. And we certainly support clean water. But what we don't support is regulatory changes that would impose costly, complex, and highly punitive federal regulatory programs on hundreds of thousands of farmers and ranchers nationwide. Over the past year, EPA and the Corps have repeatedly told farmers and ranchers that they have nothing to fear from the proposed rule because normal farming is exempt from regulation. These statements are false. The existing agricultural exemptions, as interpreted by the agencies, will not protect farmers and ranchers from burdensome federal permitting requirements and potentially devastating liability under this proposed rule. I've summarized the reasons why in my written testimony, and I'd be pleased to answer questions here today or at any time about the scope of the agricultural exemptions. The EPA officials here in Washington have said that our concerns about the rule are not justified, even silly. But out in the countryside, our experience is that EPA and the Corps interpret their rules broadly, not narrowly. Just as important, citizen plaintiffs have the power to enforce the Clean Water Act, and their lawyers will take the broadest possible interpretation of the rule. At least based on the language in the proposed rule, which is all we've seen, I can say that farmers who dare to farm near or across ditches, small wetlands, or ephemeral drainages will be at great risk if they ever catch the eye of agency inspectors or environmental interest groups. Promulgation of this rule will leave farmers and ranchers with no acceptable alternative. They can either continue farming, but under a cloud of uncertainty and risk. They can take on the complexity, cost, and equal uncertainty of Clean Water Act permitting, or they can try to avoid doing anything near ditches, small wetlands, or stormwater drainage paths on their land. It's a no-win situation for farmers and ranchers. It's not what Congress intended, and it's not necessary for clean water. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I look forward to any questions you may have.
Thanks so much for your testimony. Mr. Gledhill, please go ahead and proceed for 5 minutes when you're ready.
Thank you, Chairman Thompson, Ranking Member Lewin Grisham, and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me to testify on how EPA's rulemaking will affect the USDA's agricultural programs, especially the ones in the jurisdiction of your committee. My testimony today stems from two experiences. First, I represent the Waters Advocacy Coalition, a large coalition, a cross-section of the nation's construction, real estate, mining, manufacturing, energy, and agriculture and forestry sectors. The coalition is deeply concerned with how this proposal could stymie growth and opportunity throughout our economy, and especially in rural America. Second, I had the honor of serving as a career official in the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs in the Office of Management and Budget. My responsibility in OIRA was to determine how EPA draft regulations and policies affect our national welfare and the budgets and missions of other federal agencies. From these two twin streams of experience, I am very concerned that EPA is rushing forward with a rulemaking without considering the full ramifications and without fully estimating the benefits and costs of this proposal. USDA's recent budget submission, performance plan, and other program analyses do not evaluate how the WOTUS rule will increase the cost and will reduce the performance of USDA programs. From my own analysis, the impact on USDA programs will be significant and complex. Well, as you've heard today, this afternoon, the cost of the WOTUS rule is multifold. Some of the ones have been mentioned about the permitting. But let me mention some other ones that once you define something as the waters of the United States, many other provisions of the Clean Water Act apply. The spill protection requirements, the water quality standards, the anti-backsliding provisions, and the citizen suit provisions. We just heard about the citizen suit provisions, how they can enforce the Clean Water Act in place of EPA or the states. Anti-backsliding means that once a permit is set, so once a farmer has a cropland, has a discharge that's permitted, they can't make that change and make any change to that crop. Well, farmers are constantly innovating. They're constantly adding new crop protection programs, new crops, new techniques. This would stymie and make changes in land use more difficult. So what are the implications for rural America? Well, as we've heard, farmers and landowners have a choice. They can either cede jurisdiction of their land to federal permitting, or they can spend the money to acquire those federal permits. Those costs are significant. EPA estimates to be $57,000 at a minimum. The WAC has submitted, and other experts have submitted testimony that they would be hundreds of thousands of dollars in certain cases just to obtain and allow the same practices that currently happen today. But that's not all. We heard a lot through the testimony about uncertainty. Well, uncertainty affects one of the other vital elements of rural America and farming, financing. Our financing for farming is a shared risk between farmers, commercial private institutions, and the federal government. If there's uncertainty, that financing dries up. And that makes it very hard for farmers to have certainty they can move forward. So if we look at those costs and that of both uncertainty and of permitting on USDA, how does it ripple through? Well, there are several things. First, there's an effect on crop insurance demand. The recent farm bill elevated crop insurance as the main means to share farming risk in this nation. As farmers face higher costs and look at greater risks, their use of farm insurance will change, crop insurance will change. The academic literature says this interaction is complex. USDA, because this is so vital to our farming program and our farming policy, needs to look at the impact of this rulemaking on crop insurance demand and costs. There will certainly be a greater demand for farm operating loans. USDA farm operating loans serve a vital safety net when farmers cannot obtain credit from commercial sources. This program offers a lifeline to many farmers. With an average loan of $57,000 and $1.25 billion obligated, you can see many farmers take advantage of this program. As the WOTUS increases the cost of farming, the opportunities and the risks to these programs will increase. Certainly, we'll hear from others about other infrastructure programming that USDA supports in rural America, be it telecommunications, energy. The more project risk increases, the more the risk of default and other costs to USDA. Certainly familiar to this committee is the management of U.S. forests. Forests are land managers and must comply with this rule in the same way that private sector does. The Forest Service will have to redo its NEPA analyses to establish jurisdiction and to decide the impact as part of its manages the multiple uses of national forests. Right now, just since October, there's 14 pending EISs that will probably have to be stopped and reevaluated based on the jurisdictional changes in this rulemaking. And that will ripple through the hundreds of U.S. forests as each land manager tries to make the right decisions in compliance with the rule. Finally, and just like in conclusion, there's little evidence that USDA has considered these impacts. If you look at the budget documents, the performance plans, the financial analysis OMB does of credit programs that have all been submitted in the last 2 months to Congress, none of the effect of WOTUS is considered in this rulemaking. So what do we do? What can this committee do? Well, USDA has opportunities in the interagency process under OMB to raise its concerns. This committee could ask questions to USDA officials that do they understand the budget impacts? Do they understand the additional demands on USDA programs from this rulemaking? And have they brought those up? Because policy officials can only make decisions when they have information. The White House, Congress, and USDA can't understand if they haven't done the analysis. So this committee can play an important role to have those questions answered. I'm running out of time, but I would say the ranking member Lujan, you raised a great question about supplemental versus withdrawal, and the representative from Tennessee raised a question about the economic impact. I would be happy to answer those in questions if time permitting. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. Mr. McGeekia, whenever you're ready, please go ahead and proceed with 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman Thompson, Ranking Member Lujan Grisham, members of the subcommittee. My name is Russ Pachika, and I'm the Director of Government and Regulatory Affairs for the Pennsylvania Rural Electric Association. PREA is a nonprofit service organization that is headquartered in Harrisburg and represents 14 electric cooperatives in Pennsylvania and New Jersey that supply electricity to 230,000 rural households, representing more than 600,000 consumers. PREA has significant concerns with the rule as proposed by EPA and the Army Corps. As the agencies try to establish greater clarity for the authority and jurisdiction of the Clean Water Act, we are concerned that new and broadly defined regulatory definitions will create more confusion, unnecessary federal jurisdiction, and greater and unnecessary cost. As the matter has risen to an issue of national concern for the 900 cooperatives in 46 states throughout the country, I've talked with a number of our cooperative engineers who are responsible for line construction and maintenance. And in those discussions, in the shared information that we have with one another, we have the same concerns regarding definition clarity, jurisdictional expansion, and the cost-benefit problems that these regulations present to us. So a couple examples from these conversations with these engineers who do our maintenance, our constructions and maintenance. They said that the proposed broadly defined term for tributary and all waters in floodplains and riparian areas are now considered adjacent waters. This broad brush definition would capture many features commonly found on rural land already. Such definition expands federal jurisdiction and would effectively eliminate a general nationwide permit already established by the Corps for utility line activities in and around existing waters of the United States. These permits and the limits that they propose we would not be able to ascertain under these new guidelines. Another concern we have under the proposed rules is that our rights of way may be considered waters of the United States, even though they are often simple ditches alongside roads in our rurals, and that's all you ever see, that receive road and water runoff and infrequently hold that water. Though we've been told that the rule exempt ditches that drain only upland and are constructed upland, but the term itself upland is not defined within the regulations. Again, confusion and uncertainty, and I can go on and on, really relate to excess cost and increased cost. I can also talk, but it's in my testimony, about the uncertainty when it comes to granting general permits for vegetation control throughout our cooperative area. Broadly stated, any increase in federal jurisdiction would cause greater hardship and greater costs with these permits. And as you know, Congressman, we as a distribution entity of electricity, reliability and safety is our major concern. Any increased cost in providing reliable and safe electricity to our members would be a hardship for our consumer members who are our owners. In rural Pennsylvania, we average about 7 consumers a mile. Our cousins, the investor-owned utilities in Pennsylvania, average about 42. So we have 7 people paying for our a mile of distribution line as opposed to an IOU paying for that same mile with 44 consumers. Any cost inordinately affects us greater than any other utility in Pennsylvania. Cost does matter. In conclusion, the Rural Electric Cooperative would like to see and recommend that EPA and the Corps withdraw and repropose the rule to provide clean limitations on the scope of the Clean Water Act. Doing so will allow the agencies to better understand the impacts of small businesses like rural electric cooperatives and hopefully alleviate the costs created by this ever-expanding and overreaching regulations. I'd like to thank the subcommittee for allowing me to testify today. Thank you.
Russ, thank you so much for your testimony. Mr. Taylor, go ahead and proceed whenever you're ready for 5 minutes of testimony.
Chairman Thompson, Ranking Member Lujan Grisham, and members of the subcommittee, thank you for the opportunity to offer our views regarding the EPA and the Corps of Engineers' proposed rule to define waters of the United States under the Clean Water Act. My name is Sledge Taylor, and my family and I raise cotton, corn, soybeans, wheat, peanuts, and cattle in Coma, Mississippi, and I also serve this year as the chairman of the National Cotton Council. It is our belief that the proposed rule will result in federal permit requirements for many commonplace and essential farming practices. This will result in farmers like myself being forced to endure even more costly regulations and place many of us at risk for fines from the agencies or facing a citizen suit for normal farming practices. In both the proposed rule and the agency's marketing campaign aimed at selling the proposal to farmers, they paint two misleading and contradictory pictures. First is the attempt by two federal agencies to make only minor tweaks. The second picture is more critical, where the proposed rule purports to protect roughly 60% of the nation's flowing rivers, lakes, wetlands, and drinking water sources, which have been left vulnerable by state inaction and the Supreme Court's confusing opinions. The proposed rule provides none of the clarity and certainty it promises. Instead, it creates confusion and risk by providing the agencies with almost unlimited authority to regulate, at their discretion, any low spot where rainwater collects, including common farm ditches, ephemeral drainages, and agricultural ponds found in and near farms across the nation. The proposed rule defines terms like tributary and adjacent in ways that make it impossible for a farmer to know whether the specific ditches or low areas at their farm will be deemed waters of the U.S. These definitions are broad enough to give regulators and citizen plaintiffs plenty of room to assert that such areas are subject to Clean Water Act jurisdiction.
Given the breadth of the definitions in the proposed rule, the vast majority of ephemeral drainage features and ditches on farmlands would be categorically regulated as jurisdictional tributaries. The vast majority of ponds and puddles would either be categorically regulated as adjacent waters or could still be regulated as other waters. With the exception of very narrow Section 404 exemptions, any discharge of a pollutant such as fertilizer into the ditches will be unlawful without a permit. If low spots in farm fields are defined as jurisdictional waters, a federal permit will be required for farmers to protect their crops. The same goes for the application of fertilizer. As a result, the proposed rule will impose on farmers the burden of obtaining a Section 402 permit. I farm in the Delta and in the hill regions of Mississippi. Our soils, our area has soils that have very little internal drainage, so water must drain across the land to adjacent ditches and streams. As a standard agricultural practice, we use an implement called a water furrow plow to better define a small drain through these depressions deemed working lands by the USDA. This allows water from storm events to drain more quickly. Since these areas are normally dry, except during extreme storm events, we plant through these areas and the approximate 6-inch deep depressions we create with the water furrow plow. In addition, we apply crop protection products and fertilizer when needed on the plants that grow in these areas. The proposed rule, by its terms, extend permit requirements to water furrows. If these small drains become regulated, producers will not be able to apply needed inputs to raise a crop within 100 feet or more of these drains. I have served on my county's NRCS committee for 25 years and appreciate the importance of USDA's voluntary conservation programs. On my farm, we have utilized the EQIP and CSP programs. Many farmers have worked with the NRCS to implement land leveling practices on their operations. Water quality data clearly show these land leveling practices significantly reduce non-point source pollutants. Under this proposed rule, these practices will require permits, which will require mitigation, which will make these voluntary conservation measures too costly to implement, even with financial assistance. Everyday farming activities in or near ephemeral drainages, ditches, or low spots could be a violation of the Clean Water Act unless a costly permit is obtained. The tens of thousands of dollars of additional costs for federal permitting of ordinary farming activities is beyond the means of most farmers and ranchers, the vast majority of whom are family-owned small businesses. The agencies have made promises to make significant changes to the rule, and this is a positive step. Given the amount of public interest in this rule, we strongly encourage the agencies to release the revised rule again for public comment. The Clean Water Act involves an extremely complex set of rules and regulations, and it is important for rural America to have ample input into any final rule. It is clear that this rule will have significant impact on rural America and production agriculture. I thank this committee for its diligence in defending agriculture and appreciate the opportunity to testify on this important issue, and I would be pleased to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Your testimony is appreciated. Mr. Fogelsong, whenever you're ready, go ahead and proceed with your testimony for 5 minutes.
I don't have near the speaking voice of Mr. Taylor, so I want to be heard here. Good afternoon. I'm Steve Fogelsong. I'm a cattle and hog farmer from west central Illinois, and we raise corn and soybeans up there, and we've got a ranch down in southwest Georgia as well. And I'm a member of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. But this afternoon, I'll be speaking on behalf of livestock producers, dairy guys, and poultry producers across the United States. It's a great opportunity. We certainly thank you for giving us a chance to do that. Animal agriculture producers pride themselves on being good stewards of this country's resources. You know, we maintain lots of open spaces. Rangelands provide wildlife habitat. And all the while we're doing this, we're working on sustainably producing food for the world. But in order to provide these important functions, we need to be able to operate without excessive federal burdens. This one we're talking about here today is excessive. As a livestock producer, I can tell you that after reading the proposed rule, it's got the potential to impact everything that I do on my place. And every tributary stream, dry pond, you name it, we've got lots of them, are going to be an issue. And what's worse, the ambiguity that's proposed in this rule, and these folks and everybody today has done a great job of explaining just the problems that we've got there. And I, what I want to do is spend a few minutes, plus you guys are being bored, and if the clerk could fix that, we're going to put up some pictures here. We're going to do a little pictorial here of my place. This picture here that you're seeing, this is my house. You can see my house tucked away there. And tonight, when you go on Google and you dial down a little bit closer down there, you're going to see my wife and one of my grandkids. And they're swimming right there next to that dock there that goes out. There's a little blue dot, little white dot. I did this. This picture was taken in 2012, the worst drought in my entire life. By far a bad deal for us, but it's going to be a great day today because all the vegetation's gone off of our ranch, and we're going to be able to see every depression that's out there pretty clearly. There's a little blue and white dot. When you see those, you're going to wonder what that's all about. Well, we're real sensitive around our place to skin cancer, and we wear protective clothing. That's why I can pick them out. I knew where they were at. So that's kind of where we live. This is all old coal strip mines is what this is. Everything out here has been reclaimed. Man turned it all upside down, and we spent all of my lifetime putting it back together and turning it into a ranch where we can produce cattle. When we go to this next deal, this 2012, this looks like a moonscape. This is a pasture just north of the house up there. You can see we've been feeding the cows. It's about 8 o'clock in the morning here. You can see that little line of ants over there that look like they're going back and forth to burrow. That's cows, but we're a long ways up. The question here that this picture brings up, you see that dry lake right there, that dry lake bed. There's no water left in it. All of those little rills that run down to that, are those a WOTUS? Is that a Waters of the United States? That's the question I've got to answer. Here's another little picture. Same kind of deal, little pond out there. Now, Mr. Lucas, in your country, this is called a tank. And farmers and ranchers go out and they build tanks, and they build them so that the cattle have got water. And in the summertime, those cattle will go out and hang out in that tank. And it's really nice on a morning that it's warm enough that you can go swimming at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's pretty doggone hot. Now, the question I ask you here, is this Waters of the United States? Here's a picture of our confinement barn, just the end of it right there. We run about 4,500 head of cattle in there. That's a roof structure with slats underneath of it. All of the waste in that those cattle produce goes in that tank, and we use every last bit of it to improve the soil conditions and the fertility on this ranch. We do a darn good job of maintaining that. There's no runoff coming out of that building. And here's a little lake that's only about a quarter of a mile away from that building right there. And all that land that runs around there drains into it. Our concern is, do we have to do something about it? Is this Waters of the United States? Here's the other end of the barn. It is a quarter of a mile long. You can see it from a jetliner if you leave Peoria and fly to Dallas. So it's a pretty good sized shed. Same deal. We got to have a few pens around there where we gather up cattle. When they come in, they've got to hang out someplace. And this is where they wind up. But everything drains someplace. Now, this is another question here. Those buildings there happen to be hog buildings. They could just as easily be chicken barns. But those hog buildings there, and you'll notice, and here's the question on this one here. See that parking lot? There's about 25 employees that park their cars right there. And all the dust that comes out of the fans on those buildings lands here. Lois Alt in West Virginia fought a great battle with the EPA a year or so ago over this very question, because when it rains, that water flows somewhere. You all understand how that goes, and it all goes downhill. Well, it goes east here, and it runs through those rails and winds up in that lake. That lake is where we water those hogs. Does the EPA have jurisdiction over that lake? And this is the last picture I want to show you right here. If you look down there to the far right-hand corner on there, that little circle, that's the Illinois River. Now, boats float there. We ship corn up and down that river on barges. That is navigable. That is a water of the United States, and it always has been. Nobody owns that. That is a water that we're considered. At the opposite end of that deal right there, you're going to see that little circle. That's the middle of my ranch. And you see those little lakes that I've been showing you, those little blue lines that are on there. And that's Otter Creek, all the little fingers that go around there that flow all the way up, and they go down into that deal. Now, here's the deal. I pay for that. I don't see the EPA or the Corps on any mortgage that I've got that says they've got jurisdiction over that, and I sure as heck don't see them come payday. So it causes me quite a bit of concern when they want to have control over that, and it flows all the way to the Illinois River, 11 and a half miles away. Where does that thing end? Where does their jurisdiction start and stop? That's the question that we've got to ask. And I certainly thank you for the opportunity, and we'll entertain any questions you might have.